Good morning, DEF CON. Thanks, everybody, for getting up this early. I'm not the speaker, Gregory White, sitting here to my left. My name is Ryan Russell. I work for SecurityFocus.com. Some of you may be familiar with the site. We host BugTrack. I've been given permission to stand up for a couple minutes this morning to plug my book, actually. Some of you may have seen it. It's been for sale over at the Loom Panics booth. Hackproofing Your Network Internet Tradecraft. And I've got a couple of the authors who worked on it up here with me. To my right, you've got Rainforest Puppy, Dan Kaminsky, and Oliver Friedrichs also works with me over at Security Focus. In addition to those who made it up this morning, Elias Levy, who's not here in town, my boss, actually, some of you know him as LF1, moderator of BugTrack, Blue Boar, the guy who runs the VulnDev list. Caesar, he's probably going to be, he's around if you catch up with him, easy to spot, shoulder length blue hair. Greg Hoagland, Jeremy Rausch, Georgia Ganinsky, and as well as a bunch of other people who've contributed to the book. So I've been getting some real good feedback on this. And, you know, I want to take an opportunity to thank the people who've worked with me on the project. Even folks like Marcus Rainham, probably by now everybody has heard about Marcus's keynote over at Black Hat. I gave him his copy. He actually read through the first chapter, the political chapter, for me. And I signed my copy for him. Please don't sue. And he said he won't unless he can actually prove that someone used my book to break into a site. So some of the authors are going to be speaking or doing something throughout DEF CON. Hoagland's got a talk later on today. Of course, Mudge has got the TCPIP drinking game going on this evening, I believe. Mr. Kaminsky here is one of the standby speakers, so you may have an opportunity to hear him speak if someone flakes for their speaking engagement. And I'm not sure if I'm supposed to announce this or not, but Caesar's got his challenge going on this evening, so if you manage to figure out the location for that, you can probably join him for that. The website for the book is internettradecraft.com. It's not up yet. We got the book ready right up to the last minute for the show, and I'll be doing that as soon as I get back. So right now it says coming soon. The Loom Panics guys have got the book for sale. That's the bookstore running this side of me. They're probably just about sold out of the first batch that I gave them yesterday, and they got some more coming this afternoon. So swing by there, take a look at the book. They'll have some out on the table you can take a look at. Unfortunately, I don't have time for any questions. I want to make sure I get Gregory his opportunity to get his talk started on time. I got 8 seconds left. And I've got a few press kits. If there's any press people who want some information on the book, book reviewers, that includes online press, the underground media coverage as well. Be happy to give you guys some. I've been told I can have a little bit of time up in the press area, so I'll be hanging out up there for the next 20, 30 minutes if someone wants to swing by and grab a press kit or ask some questions. And thank you for your time. Oh. So I forgot. The crowd's a little bit thin for us to actually fling copies at you. It's also pretty early. I don't know if people are alert enough yet. So let's see a show of hands. Who'd like a copy? And we'll pick some folks out of the crowd.
We've got. I'm biased. People will hate me.
So. Guy in the black DEF CON shirt. Did you get some way? You actually. Here, one more. Huh? Hang on, I gotta go for the Fed here. That's intended for the guy behind you there, sorry. Thank you.
Yeah.
How about a big hand for Gregory White?
Okay, good morning here. As we get started, I just wanted to comment here. I'm going to read a page out of their little book here for a second on the term hacker. A malicious meddler who tries to discover sensitive information by poking around, hence password hacker, network hacker. The correct term for this sense is cracker. Now, this morning, you're going to see me using the term hacker. I personally agree with the crackers one there, but hacker was, or hacking was a term that was used throughout the trial, and so I'm going to go ahead and stick with that. I'm going to also apologize here. I'm going to stand up and wander around a little bit and apologize to the camera dude here, but I get somewhat passionate about this topic, and I get nervous and excited, and I start wandering around, and I want to talk and use my hands and fling them around, so please excuse me for that. I notice a number of law enforcement slash Fed types in the audience that I recognize. I welcome you folks. I want to stay almost as a caveat before I get started to say I am not anti-government. For heaven's sakes, I worked for the Air Force for 19 years, 13 of which I was involved in computer security in one way, shape, or form, including my dissertation topic, which is on the subject of intrusion detection. I am, however, not convinced that the government doesn't make mistakes periodically and that they're not infallible, and that's what I'm here to talk about today is what I might refer to as a cautionary tale to both sides, because what can happen when it goes wrong? What could happen to you? You know, we have to be aware of the situation around us here. Okay, first slide. Okay, that's the obligatory corporate slide. That's who I work for now. Those are guys that are paying my bill. A little computer security company down in San Antonio, Texas. I'm in charge of the consultants, and yes, we are hiring. Okay, enough of that. The case I'm going to talk about was kind of an interesting one. This is one where it was billed as the first of its kind in the Air Force, and in fact, I think it was the first of its kind in the military, because as we all know, the military, we heard yesterday in the Meet the Fed panel, you know, how many times the government gets hit daily by individuals trying to break into the government systems. But this was the first case where we had an individual in the government, a military member, who was accused of breaking into or attempting to break into systems that were owned by industries, other individuals, using equipment that was owned by the government. So we have a member inside the military and using government resources to break into other people's computer systems. So it was the first one of its kind in that sense. He was accused of hacking, there's that term again, into at least three different companies. There are a number of other companies that they suspected, but there was really only what they refer to or considered evidence for potentially three of them. Possible 17-year sentence in Leavenworth. We're talking, you know, real honest-to-goodness Leavenworth time here, folks. That's including the actual jail time based on the Title 18 U.S. Code 1030, you know, the whole thing, as well as other UCMJ or military justice system kind of fun stuff that the kid was facing. The evidence, what they had as evidence, notice that's in quotation marks there, was basically two failed login attempts that tied the cadet to one of the systems. The individual attempted to gain access to two accounts, which are unauthorized accounts. We'll get into that discussion in a little while, but that's what they had. That showed, and they were able to trace that back to the cadet, and by the way, he admitted to doing that on day one when the OSI came in and did the investigation and did the interview of him. He admitted to that, but we'll get to why in just a second. They saw a lot of undernet activity. The kid was doing a lot of IRC stuff on the undernet. That becomes real important in a few minutes. We'll see why. Egg Drop and BitchX were found on both his PC, actually references to them on his PC, as well as an ISP, one of the companies that was broken into. And you'll see why that's important in a second. And the cast of characters, kid had a couple, you know, once again, I'm not anti-Air Force, anti-government. For heaven's sakes, it was the Air Force that was defending him, and it was the Air Force members that were on the jury. But there were two prosecuting attorneys, two folks that were defending the cadet to begin with. There actually came in two more later on because he ends up firing his first set, but we'll get into that too. It was a military trial. It was a military judge with a military jury. Okay. And the way it works in the military here, we have what we refer to as an Article 32 hearing, which is basically the military version of a grand jury. This is where the prosecution gets to present its case, basically, to present the evidence that they have, and an individual is supposed to be impartial, will sit there, listen to the evidence, listen to the defense, explain that evidence, and decide whether there's enough evidence to forward this or to recommend that this be forwarded to court-martial. The Article 32 hearing, all of this, by the way, originally occurred in the fall of 97. By the way, it is still going on. It's not over yet, so this is being dragged on for several years. The Article 32 hearing occurred in the fall of 98. What was interesting was the day before this Article 32 hearing, there was a security briefing. Now, I got dragged into this, into the whole trial at one point because a cadet came walking into my office. At the time, I was the deputy head of the computer science department at the Air Force Academy. I taught the operating systems course, I taught the networks course, and I taught a course that I had developed in computer security and information warfare. A number of the cadets knew me because of that, because a lot of folks were interested in the security thing. It was the most popular elective course in the major. One of these cadets had a friend who he sent to me and said, sir, you need to talk to this guy. He needs some help. And this cadet came up and came in the door and into my office and plopped down in a chair and handed me this notebook and said, sir, I need some help. I'm accused of breaking into a number of computer systems. I didn't do it. This is what they say is evidence. It's a notebook full of information, and I need some help. His lawyers, his defense lawyers, are basically, you know, no offense to them, they're lawyers, but they didn't know anything about computer science. And all this IP address, MAC address stuff was just, you know, zooming over their heads. They didn't understand what was going on. And so he came in to see if I would help. I looked and started flipping through the pages of this and said, you got to be kidding me. This is evidence. I've got more stuff on my computer, for heaven's sakes, than you had on your machine. In fact, any one of the cadets in my operating system had more nasty stuff on their machines than this kid did. And I'm looking at this and say, man, if this guy is going to go to jail for this, I hope nobody ever takes a look at my machine because I'm in a heap of trouble. So I went ahead and I said, yes, I'd love to help you. Let me call you. And I called the defense, his attorneys, who said, oh, or would you be willing to help? Okay, well, we'll get you appointed as a defense witness, expert witness. There were a number. Oh, the security briefing. I never got to that point. The day before the Article 32 hearing, this is great, I love this. The Article 32 hearing was supposed to occur. There was a security briefing held in the Air Force at every base, basically, where it might be considered a potential that had a high potential for being a target, you know, outside of the world. They have to have this annual briefing where the OSI comes in and they start talking about the threat and what's going on and what you have to watch out for. And I was, because I required all the cadets in my operating systems class to load, and the networks class, to load Linux on their machine, and it was still connected to the network. The security folks at the academy were worried that this provided another platform, an avenue for potentially for individuals to get into the Air Force Academy network. And so they were initially not going to allow me to do that or have the cadets, you know, run Linux on their systems. I said, no, they are going to run Linux on their systems. Let's figure out a way we can do this. And so the agreement that we reached was that I would have to attend all these security meetings, and they would send me all the bulletins about securing Linux, and we would enforce and, you know, make sure the cadets implemented those patches or whatever needed to be done on their Linux boxes. And I was all for that anyway, because I'm trying to teach them security anyway. So that was the compromise that we reached. The day before the Article 32 hearing was supposed to occur, they had this annual briefing at the Air Force Academy, where they invited all the security officers to come in, and they had a couple OSI special agents stand up in front to give this briefing. What was interesting is they started off this briefing with, I don't know why we're standing here in front of you guys. For heaven's sakes, I was a fraud investigator for 17 years. You guys are the experts. You know, and both of them commented on, you know, I've just been doing this for a year now. You guys are the experts. And I'm sitting here going, no, these can't be the same guys that are going to testify tomorrow. But I started taking notes or comments that they were making throughout, you know, this little security briefing. And sure enough, the next day, when we start presenting evidence, they introduce the OSI officers. It's the same two officers. This case was the first one for either one of them in computer crime. One was a fraud investigator and had been for 17 years. And the other one was a fresh, brand new OSI agent, you know, type individual. This was their first computer crime case. We had, from the word go, I was looking through there and saying, well, what about the log files? Every Air Force base has this intrusion detection system that is monitored by the Information Warfare Center. It's a system called ASIMS. I said, where are the ASIM logs? It's showing, you know, what's been going on here. If you're doing this stuff here, ASIM should have alerted on this. And we were told, well, you know, remember, this is about, 9 months into it. I mean, it's been 9 months, and nobody had ever bothered to check for some of these logs, because most of them didn't know that they, in fact, I don't think anybody realized they existed, either the prosecution side or the defense. And so we were told at that point, well, you know, someone checked, said, well, there are no logs. No logs existing. I'm thinking, well, I don't know how long they keep ASIMS logs, but, you know, that's a tremendous amount of information. So if they delete it after 6 months, it didn't surprise me. But we were being told that there was no logs. But throughout the trial, miraculously, log files just magically appeared. Just periodically, generally like the day before we were supposed to do something. You know, the prosecution would say, oh, by the way, we found something. You know, when did you find this? Well, we had it a couple of weeks ago, but we forgot to give it to you. That occurred time and time again. It was getting to be, you know, it was past being funny. It was annoying, shall we say, at the very least. There were numerous mistakes that were made in the testimony by the investigator during this, which painted a picture of this individual, which I think affected the investigating officer. Now, what were the mistakes that I'm going to refer to here? Let's take a look at some of these things. These are pretty good. We have, for example, Bitch X, which I mentioned before, which was used. Everybody knows what Bitch X is. Anybody who plays around with IRC knows what Bitch X is used for. Well, it was described as a tool loaded by hackers to gain illegal access to computer systems. That was how it was portrayed. Egg drop, we know what egg drop is, right? That was a Unix program which, when installed on a system, usually illegally, causes that system to function as an IRC server. Now notice the parenthetical statement that was inserted there. Usually illegally. You know, what picture are we beginning to get of this individual? Anybody who's participating in this kind of activity? You, Undernet. This is the best one. I like this one. An underground network system on the internet, which is a known vehicle for computer hackers to share and distribute information and instructions, as well as for the conduct and information distribution of other illegal activities, such as the exchange of victim information and transfer of child pornography by pedophiles. Oh, we've got the terrorist part. Yeah, well, they didn't mention that one. Now, am I going to stand up here and tell you that pedophiles don't use the Internet? No, I'm not going to say that, but I'm not going to try to leave the impression that the only people that use the Internet are hackers who are trying to share information or people who are, you know, trafficking in child pornography. But that's the image that is now being presented. This is the definitions that were used. These are the ones that were presented. This is what the OSI dudes were talking about. He had no idea what Eggdropper Bitch X was used for. And the thing that bothered me about this was he didn't bother to check. What I did at the Article 32 hearing was I brought out a page. All you had to do to find out what Eggdropper Bitch X was is what? Go to your browser and do a search. And you can find the Eggdrop homepage or the Bitch X homepage. They had home pages, basically, for, if you will, for these things where you could find out exactly what it is, download copies, and so on and so forth. And I presented these at the Article 32 hearing and say, here is what these things are for. Okay, Eggdrop is not this nefarious tool that is only loaded illegally by individuals. It has a purpose. As a matter of fact, Eggdrop, one of its purposes can be described as for security reasons, for heaven's sakes, people. You know, the Traceroute was another thing that caused untold problems in this thing, because one of the individuals was asked, the companies was asked, okay, well, how did you track this person back to the Air Force Academy? He said, well, we used a number of different techniques, including, you know, utilities such as Traceroute. Okay, now what does this sound like? I mean, let's listen to this. Traceroute, and I was able to track someone back to the Air Force Academy. So this sounds like this neat tool, doesn't it? And this is the way it was portrayed, where if I have got someone who's connected to my system, I can just run this utility, and it will track that individual's path all the way back to wherever it was that they were. And, yeah, it's cool, isn't it? That's a cool tool. But that's how it was portrayed. And this is what people believe. Oh, okay, so you were able to trace it all the way back to the Air Force Academy. Now, once you start talking to these people, how did you track it back to the Air Force Academy? Well, you know, the other individuals had, you know, gotten on the phone. I mean, that's how it's normally done. We get on the phone and we talk to someone and say, hey, you got someone breaking into my system. And we look at it and say, well, it's not from us. He's coming from over here. And then you track it by telephone is how it's done, right? Well, you know, that wasn't mentioned, you know, when they started this whole thing. Now, after doing all of this, I mean, I have to admit, the defense, when we got finished with the Article 32 hearing, I was the last one to basically testify at the hearing, and I thought we'd score, you know, we'd done a home run, man, because at the end, the prosecution wasn't even asking any questions. The only question he asked me was, well, who do you think did it then? I mean, this is kind of like, normally you don't have the prosecution ask me that kind of question. It was just wide open at this point where I could go ahead and, well, if you want to know, here's what I think has happened. You know, the cadet described on day one when you interviewed him, here's his statement, and here's the individuals, and here's the whole thing. And I just explained why, you know, this is why I believe what he's telling me is true. Because everything I have found and everything that we see testify, I mean, basically is more evidence. What he said was correct. And so I thought, quite literally, you know, and I'm not exaggerating, the prosecution, the guy there who was doing that was just kind of like, oh. And I thought, you know, we were out, you know, high-fiving and the whole thing on the defense side here, because this is cool, man, this is done. And we were surprised then when the case was forwarded for trial. The investigating officer who had heard the evidence on both sides decided that I didn't know what I was talking about, basically, bottom line. If you take a look at her, it was about 6 pages that she forwarded for why she recommended that this case be forwarded. She completely just basically discounted everything I had said and the pages I had introduced and went ahead and used the same. And she literally, in her report, she used the same definition for these things that was used by the investigators, exact same. She just took it verbatim out of their report of investigation there and inserted it into her findings. Completely ignored, and it just baffled us. You know, we have individuals, no offense to the investigators in this case, they were new, but they didn't understand computer science. Then you have the guy who's, you know, teaching this, for heaven's sakes, who tells you, no, this is what they're for, and which one do you listen to? Well, obviously you're not going to listen to the defense guy because, you know, he's obviously biased on this, so we'll listen to the OSI dudes. Mind-boggling. So she recommended that one of the cases be, one of the charges be dropped. It wasn't, but she did recommend it. and recommended the rest be forwarded. During the Article 32 hearing, we actually recessed at one point because I kept on harping about these log files that I wish someone had found. And she said, well, let's go see if they're there. Well, guess what? Some more log files appeared during the Article 32 hearing. You know, they had actually, the prosecution was entering as evidence at this thing a synopsis of some log files. We said, wait a second, that's a synopsis? Where's the raw data? And that suddenly magically appeared. So that we weren't looking at someone else's version of what the log said, but we were looking at the raw data itself, so we could actually take a look-see at that. Well, that appeared, but we were also once again told at the Article 32 hearing that, well, this is it. No more log files exist. ASIM logs, they don't exist. None of this stuff exists. We can't find it. Firewalls, no, et cetera, et cetera. Nothing exists. Another thing that was interesting, on day one, when the investigating officers, they interviewed the cadet, he made a statement saying, basically, here's what I'm doing. And in this statement, he spilled his guts, man. He named names and everything. He said, here's the interview. I was given this account. I thought this individual, he'd given me accounts previously. He was authorized, actually. And in a testimony later in the trial, the individual who we're talking about here testified, and he admitted to having given out accounts before on systems he was authorized to, just giving people accounts. And so he admitted to doing that. And this cadet was saying, hey, this guy gave me an account. Here's the accounts he gave me. Here's the user IDs and passwords. Here's where this individual's at, John Doe at universityofsouthcarolina.edu, you know, type thing. Gave him all that information. Now, what did the OSI do with that? They went and started asking the roommate. They said, okay, do you know a John Doe? Well, no, I don't know a John Doe. And so then they went to other people in the squad, and do you know a John Doe? And I mean, we have the interviews here where they're actually asked, copies of the interviews where they said, stated that they asked these questions. And they said, no, we don't know John Doe. And they finally got to someone in the squadron who said, I know a Jack Doe over in 42nd Squadron. And so they go trucking on over to 42nd Squadron and interview the guy in the 42nd Squadron. Do you know this cadet X here? You know, we were accused of doing this. Oh, I don't know this cadet. I don't know what you're talking about. And so they drop it. You know, and I pointed out once again at the trial, the 32 hearing, I said, wait a second, folks, has anybody bothered to even try to contact? And I have to, you know, we have to slam the defense in the same time here because none of the defense lawyers had. It took me 4 emails, you know, all the investigating capabilities I have at my disposal here, you know, all the things. It took me 4 emails to get to an individual who could put me in touch with this person. You know, I don't have a lot of investigating officers out there at other states or something like that that I can rely on. But I could do 4 emails, and I found it. And I blasted everybody at the Article 32 hearing and say, how come nobody's bothered to go see if they could verify this cadet's story and talk to this individual? Does this person really exist? Does this person have accounts on these other systems? Has this person ever given out an account? Why hasn't anybody talked to him? You know, nobody did. They eventually did. But why did they contact him? They wanted him to serve as a witness at the trial. That's how they approached it. It was really kind of interesting. Okay. The first attempt, notice the word attempt there, at the trial occurred in February of 99. I remember it was 97 when this stuff was started, and now we're finally in the February or spring of 99. This kid, meanwhile, all his machine, his computer was confiscated because that, of course, is evidence. Anything that had notes that looked like it might be had something to do with deal with networks scrawled on it was confiscated. Including textbooks, including his U.S. Air Force Academy Cadet Honor Code handbook was confiscated because it had something scrawled on the back of it that looked like it might be network related. And so they confiscated all this. And this cadet is still trying to take classes. And, you know, at the academy, every cadet has a computer system and a lot of stuff, you know, instructors will email assignments and things like that or ask you to turn in. And he doesn't have a machine. He's having to pester his roommate to borrow machines or go to other people in the squadron. And a number of other things were confiscated. He had some class notes that he needed that had been confiscated, you know. And so he's still struggling to try to go ahead and be a student. But finally the trial occurs, or at least the first attempt. The first thing that the defense said was, hey, we want a new Article 32 hearing, folks, because we are still getting report. You know, I remember back at the Article 32 hearing, we were told no log files exist, nothing else exists at this point. Well, guess what? Periodically, something else will show up, and we're handed some more data. We were still getting data, information the week before the trial. In fact, we had logs. We received logs that included times. It showed when the cadet was logged on, and we compared that with times when the individual said the hacker was on their system. We had log files that showed the cadet wasn't even logged on when this hacking activity was going on. Now, I don't know about you, but I would consider that important information. Here's a file that shows cadet wasn't logged on. Here's some files that showed cadet or hacker was logged on. Maybe they're not the same individual. You know, would be the, we thought this might be pertinent information. Might have been something important to know at the Article 32 hearing. And so they made a motion basically saying, no, we don't think we should be doing a trial. We think we should get a new Article 32 hearing so we have a chance now that we have all the evidence, supposedly at this point. We have all the evidence. We can now present it and we can make a correct decision in this grand jury equivalent. Can make a correct decision about whether to forward this, forward this to trial or not. Well, what they did, the prosecution did is they called in the investigating officer, to testify and basically asked her, in a nutshell, would this evidence, this new evidence, have influenced your decision in any way, shape, or form? And she basically said no. So the fact that we have infinite information that shows that the cadet wasn't even logged on at the time the hacking was going on would not influence you in any way, shape, or form. And then they asked her, well, you know, how much do you understand about computers? Because, you know, you have to establish her expertise to be able to figure out if, you know, she knew what she was talking about. And her response was, well, I'm about a 6 out of 10. You know, I was asked later on to comment about that 6 out of 10. I said, well, a 6 out of 10 on a logarithmic scale maybe, but, you know. And the interesting thing about that, there was only about two people in the courtroom that I think understood that and got that joke. The cadet did, because he started smirking because I was asked that when I was on the stand to comment on that. The cadet got it. He started smiling. Of course, he's had, you know, calculus classes and a number of math classes. And the judge did. The 6 out of 10 and logarithmic scale thingy. I'll explain that to you. Come up after and I'll explain. We'll get the chart. Anyway, the judge actually made reference to that later on in a comment that he made, which was kind of humorous. But the interesting thing about this, and why do I think this was, why did I make that comment? Because I had talked to an individual who had to explain to her what an icon was, a computer icon. And this is a 6 out of 10. On the computer scale. So once again, this individual is painting a picture of herself as an expert, or at least a fairly knowledgeable individual. Heck, I would have only given myself a 7 or an 8, you know, on a scale of 10, because there's a lot about computers I still don't know. But I have a PhD in computer science, for heaven's sakes, and I give myself maybe a 7 or an 8 at best. You know, so she's a 6. Anyway, that was kind of interesting. Basically, what happened at this point was the judge, who was an interesting individual in himself, he had a reputation for, well, how he was first introduced to me by one of the defense folks was, oh, great, we got the hanging judge. He you could tell from the word go, he wanted to establish that this courtroom was his domain. Because any type of small procedural thing, whether it was prosecution or defense, he went and lit into the lawyers and blasted them for whatever it was. He was going to make sure that everybody knew that he was in charge. He at one point, basically after we had, you know, that all the motions are still going on here, he denies them all, which was no surprise. You know, everybody predicted that was going to happen because of who the judge was at this point. He then basically just starts blasting the defense attorneys and tells them that they have done an inadequate job of representing the cadets and they should be ashamed of themselves. He chewed me out for doing an inadequate job as the expert witness because, after all, I'm the only one who understands anything about computers. Well, except for the 6 out of 10, of course. But I'm the only one that understands anything about computers and the defense don't. And it was my responsibility to educate these people. And if they don't understand it, it's my fault. And so on and so forth. And then the lawyers asked to take a break at that point. They go off for a little closed door session. And when we come back out, you know, everybody's big smiles because at this point the cadet stands up and fires his lawyers. You know, and the judge says, why do you want to release your lawyers here? You know, your attorneys. And he goes, why no longer have any confidence in them? Well, why don't you have any confidence in them? Why don't you have any confidence that they're able to represent me, you know, adequately? Well, why do you think that? Well, sir, you said that. And the judge, it was really kind of interesting because you see on the face that he stops and pauses for a second and thinks back to what it was he had said. And he said that. He told him that they had done an inadequate job of representing him, and he said that on record. And so, you know, you can tell that he's upset. He tries to talk the cadet out of it, but the cadet sticks to his guns. And at this point, what he's trying to do, you know, quite literally, is we're still getting information. We still haven't had a chance to really go through all that information. And we can't get them to delay the trial for any reason. So by firing his judges, what is he doing? Or his lawyers, what is he doing? You know, he's going to get some more time now. And so he fires his lawyers. We get another month, basically, to go ahead and start reviewing log files and things like that that are still coming in. And the trial, part two, takes place a month later. Once again, we're still getting Friday. This started on Monday. Friday before the trial is supposed to commence or reconvene here. We're still getting information. We got 1.5 gigabytes of information that last week. We finally, remember A. Sims that we didn't have any records of? We suddenly find the week before the trial that not only did they have some log information, but there had been some alerts generated by some activity that the cadet had been doing. Isn't this pertinent maybe to the trial? We would like to have an opportunity to go through all of this information. At this point, I had actually elicited the help of another individual, another instructor, another guy with a PhD in computer science from the Air Force, from the CompSci department, a friend of mine, who also taught operating systems and networks and was actually going to teach the computer security course after I left. Because at that point, I had already turned my paperwork in to separate from the military. Still, evidence is still appearing. We want, hey, we got to delay this thing. We've got to have a chance to look at the evidence. Well, you know, he denies it again. And then they have another motion to delay it simply because in the military, you're allowed to you have a military judge or attorneys that are assigned to you, but you also have the right to have a civilian attorney represent you. And what this individual had done was in between that first trial and the second, he'd gone out and hired a civilian lawyer. Now, the civilian lawyer is actually a rather famous one because he'd represented a number of folks in the military, but he was a busy one also. And so he wasn't able to be there because he was already representing a two-star general in another case that week. And so they said, okay, we would like to delay this. He was available the next month. So they're asking for a delay here 1 month so that this kid could have the civilian lawyer of his choice, you know, the attorney of his choice represent him. And the judge basically said, the judge knew that this was going to happen because he was prepared. He pulled out a piece of paper ripped out of a Air Force Times magazine, a newspaper, and said, look, here's a whole bunch of lawyers that consider themselves military experts. This kid could have picked any one of them. He went out there and deliberately found one that couldn't be here at this time. And so, you know, motion denied. And he made a statement, which was actually quoted in the papers because it was so cool. He said, not everybody can be represented by an F. Lee Bailey, a Johnny Cochran, or a Frank Spinner, who was the lawyer in this case. You know, kid could have gotten somebody else. Case will go on. Their trial will go on. You know, so he was not allowed to be represented by the attorney of his choice, not because, you know, he was trying to do some finagling thing. That's what he was accused of. But basically, he was just not allowed to have the attorney of his choice. You know, and it wasn't like, is that an unreasonable request to wait 1 month to have the lawyer of your choice? The judge thought so. It was interesting. Remember that lead investigating dude that was testifying about Bitch X and all those other kind of fun stuff? By the time the trial rolls around, they decided they didn't want him to testify. And he didn't. He didn't testify at the trial. They'd actually gone out and got themselves a new expert witness, which was the other investigating officer who at least had a background somewhat in computer science. He had a bachelor's in computer science. But it was also his first computer crime case. And the individual, the defense, was basically saying, hey, look, remember way back on day one when you guys investigated him, he told you who gave him the account and all this kind of fun stuff? The prosecution listed him as a potential witness. They were going to call him in as a witness. Actually, as it turned out in the trial, the defense still called him. You know, I used him as a potential witness there or questioned him. But he was listed as a prosecution witness also potentially there. Okay, so what was the verdict of all this whole thing? What was the outcome? We came out, what ended up happening at the very end here was we had a not guilty of the three hacking charges, if you will. He was not found guilty of hacking into those systems. But he was found guilty of what is referred to as a lesser included offense. If you take a look, and we'll look at the actual code here in a second. He was found guilty of accessing a system and recklessly, is I think the official word here, recklessly causing damage. Well, what system did he access and recklessly cause damage on? Well, that was that system that he admitted to doing, you know, on day one when he said, yes, I tried to go get that system. I tried to log onto that system, but I thought I had permission to. I had access to other accounts which this individual had given me, and those were legitimate, and the individual at trial admitted to having given out accounts on those other systems, but said he didn't do it on this one. And he also admitted to having access to a number of different other things. It was really kind of interesting, too, when you paint a picture of these two individuals and put them side by side. You have the cadet who had two failed login attempts that stopped him. Remember? He had two attempts at trying to log into the system, and he was stopped at that point. He wasn't able to get in. And at the same time, you compare this with a description of the activity that was going on at one of the sites. One of the individuals, the system administrators at one of the sites, described what best could be referred to as an online battle that was taking place between the sysadmin and this hacking dude. And the sysadmin discovered this activity was going on, and he would go ahead and he'd do something to try to kick him out. You know, he basically found the accounts, he'd go ahead and delete the accounts and kill the process, you know, the individual, the login session that the individual was on right then. And he said within 5 minutes, he testified, the guy was back in again, doing some other fun stuff. And so he tried to kick him out again. 5 minutes, he's back in again. And deleting files, removing log files and things like that, doing all sorts of wonderful stuff. Now, compare those two. We have the cadet on one hand, 2 failed login attempts stop him. You know, he doesn't try to gain access to the system again at that point because he couldn't get past these 2 failed login attempts. You have the hacker over here who's described as an individual who's carrying on an online battle. Gets kicked off the system, is back in within 5 minutes. Get kicked off the system again, back in again. I don't know about to you folks, but that doesn't sound like the same individual potentially to me. That sounds like potentially 2 different people. But this is the kind of stuff, and if you compare it, you compare this individual that the cadet said, hey, he's the one who gave me the account in the first place. This individual was working as a sysadmin at several different sites. This individual had admitted to basically hacking. He said he always did it, though, with permission, but he admitted to trying to break into computer systems before. And you have the cadet who barely understands Unix and Linux at this point. The evidence that they had grabbed from his room, when they confiscated all this stuff, they had all sorts of network diagrams and all that kind of, if you take a look at that, this is all IRC stuff that he is doing. All of it is IRC stuff. None of it is hacking related here. It's IRC activity. This cadet was heavily involved in IRC activity. Now, we can also talk about IRC. IRC at that time was a no-no, and I think it probably still is a no-no in the military because for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is we don't want some cadet, for example, at the Air Force Academy making a statement that somebody in the press happens to be in the same room. You know, we have a cadet, for example, say something like, yeah, women shouldn't be in the military. You know, and say that in the chat room and then have that on the front page of the Colorado Springs Gazette newspaper because some, you know, no offense to the reporters, but, you know, some reporter happens to be in there and quotes the cadet. You don't want those kind of things going on. Plus, it takes up bandwidth. So there's reasons, legitimate reasons the military doesn't want IRC stuff going on. So what this cadet was doing to get around doing IRC at the academy is he'd telnet to some other location and then these places that he had the accounts for, and then would go ahead and conduct the activity from there. So it would never have like a USAFA.AF.mil. And there was some disagreement at the academy on whether that was against the regulation, as a matter of fact. Because, I mean, even the network security people who were called in to testify, these are network folks at the Air Force Academy. The OSI folks couldn't decide if it was or wasn't that were involved in this case. The network security folks said, well, no, I don't think that's, you know, officially against, you know, the regulation as it is currently written. So there's some confusion about it. So, you know, the cadet thought it was okay, but hey, even the professionals here couldn't decide if that was a no-no or not. And as a matter of fact, that charge was dropped when it went to trial, so he wasn't even being considered for that one at that point because they went ahead and just dropped the one where he's basically in violation of the regulation governing the IRC stuff. But they had the evidence. Remember I mentioned they confiscated his stuff? This was cool. They confiscated his hard drive. They did a local analysis in the area there of the hard drive, media analysis. And then they sent this off to what was at one point the Air Force's OSI's office, their computer forensics, computer crime lab in Washington, D.C. This later became the DOD one. You know, so this is the DOD lab for computer crime analysis, you know, forensic stuff. What did the report say when it came back from that? No evidence of intrusive activity on the cadet's machine. So this is the OSI's own office saying there is no evidence on this individual's machine. It was not only the machine that was sent to him, but they also had tapes and some other stuff. There is no evidence that this cadet committed any of these things that he was being accused of. That's the OSI's report. You know, and then that was sent back to them and ignored. You know, type thing. It did say there's extensive evidence of IRC activity. That's what it said. It had a little caveat on that. It said, okay, no hacking, if you will, but lots of IRC stuff. That was their report. You know, so once again, I'm not, you know, anti-government or something like that or anti-OSI, because for heaven's sakes, the OSI lab, this is their lab. They said it was. But for whatever reasons, once again, remember what I'm saying here is things can go wrong. And in this case, it went wrong because they ignored that. And even though that was presented at the trial, people ignored that. Ultimately, though, the jury, we think, didn't ignore that. And like I said, he was not found guilty of hacking. He was found guilty of this lesser-included offense. Now, this statute has this limit. You have to do at least $5,000 worth of damage to be prosecuted on this specific, you know, Title 18 U.S. Code, 1030, you know, Section 1030, et cetera, et cetera. It has to be $5,000 worth of damage in a given year. for you to be prosecuted under that. So you can do, you know, $4,900 worth of damage, and, you know, you're not going to be prosecuted under this one. Now, you may be for other, like, state laws and things like that. There may be other ones, but not this specific one. So the prosecution had to show $5,000 worth of damage. Well, on this one system he admitted to having gained access to on day one, the individual who was the sysadmin came up with a figure which was $6,300 of damage. Now, that damage was based on, here, we'll go ahead and just forward it for a second. There's the little quote, you know, or taken right out of the U.S. Code. That's section, Title 18, if I recall correctly. It was section 1030. So there's the wording that he's been convicted of here. Intentionally accesses a protected computer without authorization. Okay, do we have those? Sure, he admitted to doing it. And when we got the sysadmin on the stand, we asked him, was he authorized to have these accounts? No, he wasn't. Okay, so we've got those two parts. And as a result of such, recklessly causes damage. Okay, now we have to talk about the damage portion of this for this to be, for him to have been found guilty here. The damage, the $6,300 listed, was damage based on the hours it took to fix the system. So it took, you know, approximately 63 hours here, in other words, for the sysadmin to now, and I'm not arguing with that, because what this individual had to do was he had to go out there, he had to clean out the account, you know, get rid of the accounts that were made. This individual had broken in, had also gotten rid of some of the normal utilities there and replaced them with some other newer versions. And so to be safe, what are you going to have to do? You're going to have to get rid of the ones, because you don't know what those new versions of those utilities did. So get rid of those suckers and replace them with new. So it took him some time to go through and clean everything up. I'm not arguing with that. However, at the trial, they also had, the defense got up there and was able to get the guy to admit, you know, that, okay, who caused that damage? Was it the individual who used the system, or was it an individual who originally broke into the system and created the accounts? And he goes, no, it was the individual who penetrated the system. That was the term that he used. The individual who penetrated the system was the one that caused this damage. Okay, now we've decided that the cadet wasn't the one who penetrated the system. Should this damage apply? No. But this was not pointed out. In the judge's instructions to the jury, that was not pointed out. In the defense's closing argument, they neglected to point that out also. And so what the jury did went in was what they went in with them in their minds, and there was another thing that was pointed out to the jury, was, okay, there was a discussion of damage, and this is a real cool one. This is the cool damage portion. No dollar figure was attached to this. But what we've decided in the trial was that using the computer system was damaging it. Because what you're doing, they equated degrading the performance of the computer system with damage. Now, I'm not going to sit there and necessarily argue with that either, because if you're an ISP, for example, and you've got someone who's running a bunch of stuff on this system, degrading the performance of that system, is that going to potentially damage this? Well, not necessarily damage the system, because you're not damaging the hardware, you're not damaging software on there, but are you causing damage to the company? Well, yeah, if you're losing individuals, I mean, if people are dropping the account here because they can't get through or do whatever it is that they're trying to do, well, yeah, that's probably damage, isn't it? You know, in this case. And so this individual, having accessed the system and then using it for IRC activity, which was not authorized, he was degrading the performance of the system, which could potentially then cause people to not want to use that system, and so therefore the company was going to lose revenue. There was no dollar figure attached to that, because that's kind of hard to figure out at this point, you know, to establish that. But they did decide that this was damage. You were degrading the performance of the system, and that was damage. That's an interesting one, people. That's one you got to watch out for, that one, because that's real nebulous, unless you can put some hard numbers against it. The only hard numbers they had were these, the $6,300, and that was what we think, like I said, that we made a mistake. The defense made a mistake. I think the judge, I don't know if it's his responsibility to, but he has these instructions to the jury, and it was not mentioned in his instructions to the jury. I think, you know, in retrospect, I think there's a lot of folks that lived up to that 6 out of 10. And in fact, I think, you know, the prosecution, obviously, I believe, the folks, the prosecution, the lawyers, the OSI investigating officers, but also the defense, including myself. That was the first case, I have to admit, that was the first case I was involved in from a defensive standpoint, trying to look at it as a defense expert witness. Like I said, for, you know, how many years, 13 years in the Air Force, I was involved in computer security. I was trying to secure computer systems. You know, keep people out of computer systems. That was my background. I just got involved in this because the cadet needed help, and I took a look at the evidence, and I said, I agree with you. It doesn't look like you did it. You know, and originally, I didn't know if the cadet had done it or not. I wasn't convinced of that when I saw the first thing, the stack of information that they had, the evidence. What I looked at, I said, my goodness, I'm actually probably using different words. But my goodness there, we can't convict this kid based on the evidence that we have here. Because if you convict him on the evidence that they have here, then if anybody ever suspects me of something and looks at my computer system, I have more information on my system. My cadets have more information on their system. If anybody ever suspects them of that, these guys are all guilty of sin. So you've got to prove it. You have got to prove that this kid really did it. You know, we can't let him convict him, this kid, based on this. I remember talking to myself about that, you know, and thinking about that, which is like 180 out of how I had been thinking up to that point of my traditional approach, shall we say. And then later on, as these log files kept on coming in, and as we were able to analyze these things and see that, hey, there's times the kid was on and the hacker, or the kid wasn't on and the hacker was on, there's all sorts of things. We went back and started taking a look at things like the testimony at trials at the 32 was, yes, but anybody could be a hacker. You don't have to know a lot of stuff, you know, because the prosecution finally conceded that this kid didn't know that much. But you don't need to know much, right, to be a hacker. Because all you have to do is, for heaven's sakes, go out to the internet and you can download all these little scripts and all this kind of fun stuff. Okay, let's go take a look-see, because we now have firewall logs that suddenly appeared, by the way, folks. The firewall logs magically appeared at some point in here. You know, and these firewall logs showed where the cadet was going to and showed the activity and showed the sites that he was going to when he was doing browsing. Well, let's go take a look at those sites now and see what it was the cadet was browsing. Did we have him going to any of these locations? No, for heaven's sakes. He's going to a lot of IRC stuff. There was some stuff in there that looked like he was going to these sites for research, for English papers or whatever. I mean, we could go back and look exactly where he was going and what he was looking at. There weren't any, quote-unquote, hacker sites that he was going to. You know? Interesting stuff there. I think the judge, once again, also made... I personally don't think that was the right decision, personally. The judge had been described to me as an individual who was concerned with metrics. And this was mentioned to me before. It was back when we were talking about, you know, oh, great, we got the hanging judge one. And one of the metrics, of course, is delays in trial. You don't want delays. You know, that looks bad because you got to be in control of this and you got to get the thing started. And 4 days later, you're going to finish this trial and then press on and go on to the next one. That looks good. It looks good for your record. And the judge was concerned about that. More concerned about that than allowing the kid to have the representation of his choice. Is there a Sean Hedges here, or an individual who likes to, you know, admit to being a Sean Hedges? Oh, sure, you betcha. Man, I lost my place. Anyway, I forgot what I was saying. Oh, metrics, the judge and the metrics, thank you. Yeah, the judge and metrics. He was more concerned with metrics and making sure this trial got started and got finished than he was to allow the cadet an extra month delay, despite the fact that we had evidence, like I said, that showed up Friday before the trial started, you know. Despite the fact we had log files appearing as late as that, evidence appearing as late as that, that was being handed over to the jury, despite the fact that the kid could not have the representation of his choice, and it would only mean another month's delay, the judge said, no, can't have it, sorry. Let's go on, move on. Okay, let's go on to the final slide here, I think. Yeah, about time. Oh, no, two slides here. So you think you've been hacked. For those individuals who might be in the corporate side or whatever, you know, what would I recommend? Well, if you don't know what you're doing, go get some help. You know, for heaven's sakes, if I get accused of something, I am not going to attempt to represent myself because I am not a lawyer. I don't know that much about the law. I would go get a lawyer because a lawyer is supposed to know something about that and would be able to help me. If you are not knowledgeable about computers, and you know you're not knowledgeable about computers, of course, and there's a caveat there. You have to know that you're not knowledgeable or realize it. Go get some help. There's a lot of folks who know something about computers out there. Go find one. Grab all the log files and go back a while to you. And not only the log files, you know, you got to go out there and look at the history, the cache that you got in terms of, you know, what's being cached in terms of browsers and things. You never know what you're going to have to use or what's going to be useful to you. So grab everything. And that's whether you're trying to, you know, defend someone or you're trying to prosecute someone. The more evidence, the more stuff that you have, the better off you're going to be no matter which side you are. Get as much information as you can. And by the way, if you think you have been hacked, probably one of the first things you want to do is contact, you know, like law enforcement folks, because they're going to probably try to help you, lead you through some of this process. But even if you want to do, you know, do some stuff like this beforehand, if you're on the defensive side, make sure someone's doing this, because you may need that information. Eliminate the obvious. That was one. I got this out of a book on computer crime investigation, which I thought, I like that statement, eliminate the obvious. That brought back, when I was back at the Air Force Information Warfare Center, when we first started getting the Air Force cert, establishing that, we had a phone call one time. This is way back. This is back in the late 80s. about like 89 time frame. We had a phone call from someone. We just had gotten our 1-800 number, you know, 1-800 call us, you know, kind of thing. If you have any computer problems, you think you have some security problem, because we'll come out there and help you. And fortunately for us, this one was a incident that occurred on the same base, so we didn't have to like get on an airplane and fly anywhere. But we got on, sent someone over there, and these people say, "Yeah, man, I've got to have a virus. It must be a virus, man. We're trying to save this information on the machine. It keeps on giving us an error message. I know it's just got to be a virus." Well, this is back in the days when you had, you know, the hard drives had sizes like, you know, 10 meg was a large hard drive back then. So guess what happened? The disk was full. You know, but these folks were so convinced that it had to be a security problem. They had to have a virus and something was messing up their, mucking around with their program, because it won't save the stuff. It did yesterday, but it won't do it today. Well, maybe you need to, you know, eliminate the obvious. Analyze the incident and evidence. Here's some of the steps supposed to list in this book. Refine your hypothesis. Okay, they had evidence. I have to admit, at the beginning of this, if you take a look at the testimony of the individuals, the other sysadmins, they had a connection to the Air Force Academy. No doubt about it. There was two failed login attempts showing trying to gain access to two accounts that were unauthorized, and they came from the Air Force Academy. And then when they contact the Air Force Academy, they were able to get those folks using their little logs and track and keeping track of the records that keep track of who's got what machine and what IP address and what MAG address. They were able to trace it back to the cadet. No doubt about it. Now, when you go investigate, you know, don't have the blinders on and convince that you have the right person so that maybe you can refine your hypothesis. When you start investigating and find no activity, and the OSI lab comes back and says no activity, and the cadet tells you, here's what's happened, and here's this individual, maybe it's time to, refine your hypothesis. Maybe it's not the cadet. Maybe it is somebody else. Examine alternative explanations, so on and so forth. Generate additional leads. That would have been a new lead, wouldn't it? You know, I think that fell in that category. And secure the evidence. Once again, if you're on the someone just hacked me side, you probably want to get law enforcement involved here soon. Because there's definitely a preservation of the evidence issue that you've got to do correctly. And if you don't do it correctly, it's going to cause you problems. Lessons learned. Okay, here's one I learned. Anybody ever tells you have a right to an attorney? Get one. You know, I definitely was not an advocate of lawyers before this, but after I saw what happened in this case, get one. Don't make us, you know, and I hate to say this because, you know, I think that one of the great tools used by law enforcement folks are that they count on people saying things before the lawyers get there, and that they're actually, that's useful to them because oftentimes people say too much. Unfortunately, what you say there may be construed differently than how you intended it. And I guarantee absolutely positively, if there's a bad way to construe it, a way that will hurt you, it will be construed that way. Absolutely, positively guarantee it, because we saw that happen. So, yeah, if someone tells you you can have an attorney, get one, and don't say anything. The one that goes along hand in hand, never underestimate what might be used against you. You know, like I said, notes that were scrawled. They had captured, for example, there was a copy of the message of the day that this guy had a message of the day that he was proposing, because what the cadet was proposing, and you could see this in all these little notes that were in a number of different places on pieces of paper and on the back of his honor code handbook and all sorts of fun stuff. The cadet was preparing a case along with about four other cadets to go to the administration and say, look, this would be really cool if we would allow IRC activity at the Air Force Academy, and here's how you can run it, and here's how we would administer it, and here's how, and so on and so forth. And so they had a message of the day, potential message of the day thing that they ginned up. They had the network that they proposed and all this kind of fun stuff. But remember, at that time, IRC, there's a question about it, but, you know, bottom line, IRC activity was not allowed. And so all this stuff was evidence that this kid was running an undernet IRC, you know, site. Oh, my goodness. No, it wasn't. He never did that. He never had one. He was proposing it. He was thinking about it, you know, but it hadn't been done. But this was all evidence that he was participating in this activity, obviously, and was intending on even doing further nefarious things. What else we got here? Check the law. Yeah, immediately, and be tenacious on this one. And this is what I wasn't. I accepted the word from the prosecution when they came back and said, no, we checked it, and there weren't any log files that existed anymore. I said, okay, well, that seems reasonable, because when it's 9 months later, some of them was 12 months later, you know, by the time we got around to it, how many people keep log files for that length of time? Seem reasonable. I don't think I would, especially if you're talking about the size of some of these files. And we're talking about 4,000 cadets plus another 1,000 officers and enlisted troops there at the Air Force Academy. You know, that's a lot of information to be keeping on those that many people for any extended length of time. So check the log files, me, you know, so on and so forth. What else here? If you don't know, go find someone. Or at least do some research. It's amazing what you can find on the internet, you know? It's amazing what you can pull up just using a browser. You know, you could find things like what bitch X is for, what egg drop is for, what's the undernet? You know, I don't think any of the, in fact, I know none of the investigators had ever been on the undernet. One of the things that I did is I went out there and I got listings of all the different chat rooms that were on the undernet to show folks, look at all these things. Oh man, look, here's one. Here's a Catholic site. Are they conducting, you know, pornographic type stuff in this chat room? Are they passing back hacker information on this? No, this is a discussion on what? Well, issues of interest to Catholics. And there were all sorts of other religious sites, for example. And there were sites on various artists, you know, and there was all sorts of things. The internet is just IRC activity going on for whatever interests you, right? Well, that's not how it was portrayed, of course. It was portrayed in this other way. So go out and do a little investigation. And if you don't know how, ask someone. Like I said, I'm not going to be a lawyer. I'm not going to represent myself, so I'll go out and get a lawyer. Well, if you're a lawyer, you know, if you need computer help, go get a geek, you know. And the last thing. It's kind of like, is it really worth it? And there's two points to that, or two sides to that. This is the thing that I had an interesting discussion with a couple of folks, that, you know, from the government side yesterday. Is it really worth it? And two sides. One side, is it really worth it on the government side? We're talking what ultimately happened to this cadet. You know, at that one charge that he was convicted of, he was facing 5 years in jail and dismissal from the Air Force and fines and all sorts of other fun stuff. What happened was the most serious thing that the Air Force considers it could do to a member is to kick him out of the Air Force. And so he was dismissed from the Air Force. He received no jail time. And those in the government side say, it works. You know, we got the conviction, but the kid didn't serve any jail time. So the system must really work. Well, I'm sorry, I don't like leaving it up to the system to be right every time. And I'm a little bit nervous about the fact that even if it was $6,300 of damage, this kid could have spent 5 years in jail. And as a matter of fact, he has what? He has a federal conviction here. Which, will that go with him the rest of his life? Well, yes, it certainly will. Every time he applies for a job, so on and so forth, it's going to affect him. Is it worth it? Was that $6,300 worth of damage, was that worth it? You know, is that worth that, doing that to someone's life, so we say? I don't know. I'm just asking the question. You folks can answer it yourselves. Now, on the flip side, for those folks who are participating in this activity, is it really worth it? You know, or if any people who might be on the fringe of participating in some of this activity, is it really worth it? Is it really worth you folks facing, you folks, I'm not necessarily accusing anybody here, this is just a hypothetical you, is it really worth it doing this kind of thing, because you face potentially 5 years in jail or more, you know, fines, federal conviction, you know, can't own weapons and all the things that go with it. Maybe you ought to think about it. Maybe, you know, I hate to say it, but if you're really interested in doing this hacking for hire, or hacking, why don't you do the hacking for hire either for the government, like was mentioned yesterday, or for private industry, where you can do it, you know, legally kind of thing. If you're interested in that, think of alternative ways, so to speak. But anyway, that's it. I think I'm probably done and probably have used up more than my time. Yeah, according to my inaccurate timepiece, it's about time to get started on the next one. So I thank you all for being here. I will go ahead and stay around here. If you have questions, come on up and talk to me.